I'm John Wilkerson, and heading once again to the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline to check in with our longtime friend of the program, video coordinator for the Cleveland Indians, Mike Barnett, also a former Tennessee baseball assistant, joins me now. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing good, John. Happy trade deadline day.
Oh, goodness. Can you believe it? In fact, it has now come and gone. And can you remember seeing so many blockbusters, so many big players changing, so many big names being swapped? In fact, just before the deadline, it looks like Chris Bryant was moved from the Cubs to the Giants.
Yeah, I've never seen this big of name players get moved. I mean, you usually see a few at the trade deadline, but never anything like this. And it's interesting. I mean, I don't know what that signals. Is it a different year because of the fact that we've got the basic agreement, talk coming up this winter, and they have to come up with a new basic agreement? Kind of interesting, though, to see all these moving pieces and see what happens and see where clubs are. And there's a lot of clubs. It's kind of, you know, the haves and the have-nots, and a lot of these big market clubs have certainly gotten themselves much, much better.
It was really interesting to see the Mets go out and get Baez from the Cubs when they made such a play to get Francisco Lindor. I'm not exactly sure who's going to wind up where, but they have a wealth of riches, don't they?
They sure do. I mean, that is kind of a dream middle infield if you could have it. I mean, two athletic guys that both can play shortstop. And I guess that, Javi Baez has made comments to the fact that he'd be happy to move to second base and get back with his longtime friend, Javi Baez. And it's funny because when we would always play the Cubs, those two would compete against each other like, you know, you've never seen two guys compete, even though one's not pitching to the other, whatever. But on both sides, they wanted to outdo the other guy. And so now that they're both together, that's going to be an interesting and really pretty amazing double play combination in New York.
I really think that's going to be something to watch. And while the Mets have been able to maintain first place in the NL East since they were able to climb to the top of that division, I think that's going to be one of the tighter races down the stretch. The Atlanta Braves are still trying to get right, even though obviously they don't have their all-everything and Ronald Acuna Jr. For the rest of this season. But they went out and hoped to shore up the ranks just to have options in the outfield with Duvall coming back and then also getting Jock Peterson. What do you think in terms of that NL East with the Mets trying to do something they haven't done in a little while?
Well, I think that's the club to beat, and I think they're going to be, you know, you look at Washington is completely, sold off today. I mean, they've gotten rid of everybody, it seems like. So you look at the other clubs got to play those teams too. So I think the Mets are the front runner there. I like the fact that, Atlanta's gone out and tried to get some pieces, and they actually even got Eddie Rosario from us, who's on the IL right now, but he should be back sometime soon and gives you a good outfielder, a guy can hit from the left side. And really, over about the last 2 months that he was with us, he got off to a real slow start. The last 2 months, he was on fire and really swung the bat well. So I think that, I still think the Mets are the team to beat in that division, but it'll be interesting. I mean, when you make all these kinds of trades at the deadline, you never know how it's going to work out. How is the clubhouse chemistry going to change with these clubs and things of that nature? There's so many things that go into it, and, I always kind of, make the, analogy saying this is real baseball. This is not Nintendo. And, when you got to start fitting all these personalities into a clubhouse and how's the lineup going to go and, certain places, you've got two closers like, the White Sox did here. They've had Liam Hendricks doing a great job closing, and they acquire Craig Kimbrell. So, you never know how all those dynamics are going to work out on paper. I think they all look good for these clubs, but you just never know how it's going to work out, and that's why it's fun to play the games.
Your team sits in second in the Central, 8 games behind the White Sox, who you're trying to track down. They made some moves. You mentioned that Cleveland made a move as well, but tell me, how are things since, unfortunately, got the news yesterday that Tito Francona is going to have to take more time off? How's he doing?
He's actually doing really good. The only problem is he needs to get, a hip replacement, and he needs to have another surgery on that toe that he's had to battle all year. And really, for him to be able to be ready to go next year and be 100% and get all that stuff taken care of now, he pretty much had to follow this time frame, and he's doing that, and we'll certainly miss him without a doubt, but he's going to be around.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, certainly capable hands. Our coaching staff here has been together for, you know, a long time, and DeMarlo, we all, you know him, and he'll do a fantastic job as well. And so I think even though Tito's not going to be here, I think, you know, our message and the way we're going to go about everything daily is nothing's going to change, and it's going to be status quo. And, you know, these are the guys we've got, and let's go battle and see if we can catch the White Sox.
In your career, you've worn a number of different hats, whether it be bench coach, hitting instructor, doing so many different things. Does this impact what your day-to-day will be?
Not really, because, you know, I do the replay stuff during the game, and then still involved in the hitting. And then the biggest thing I'm doing is all our advanced scouting on opposition clubs. So, you know, that takes up a good bit of my day.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than shifting any of those responsibilities, I'm going to stay with that and then do the replay stuff during the game and help out with the hitting where I can. And so I think, you know, Mike Sarbaugh is going to move in from third base to help DeMarlo out. So other than that, like I said, our message is going to be pretty much the same, and I think our guys are comfortable with that. Like I said, we'll definitely miss Tito, but the message and going about the day is going to be pretty much the same.
When you see a team like the Yankees that make such a move or so many moves to address what was a pretty big shortcoming, what is it like for a team like them who no doubt have incredibly high expectations, but they were so right-handed hitter heavy? What do you think they've done to put a little more balance in their lineup, bringing in Anthony Rizzo and Joey Gallo?
I think that just it makes that much lineup, you know, that lineup so much deeper, and especially having those two left-handed bats. They're both dangerous. They both can hit, and I, you know, from what I understand, really good makeup guys. And you know, how is it all going to fit? I don't think the Yankees are going to have as much of a problem adjusting because they've had so many injuries to position players this year that, okay, this is the lineup we got today, and we're going to go out and go for it. And now when you add length to your lineup, and it's hard on opposing teams to have to pitch to that many good hitters, you know, night in and night out. So I think adding left-handed, you know, power in their lineup, and especially those two guys, Rizzo on base percentage, I think it's going to be a real plus for that club. But, you know, they've got to overcome a big lead as well, just kind of like the same situation we're in. I like our situation a little bit better because we're, you know, we're in second place. But we just saw the Rays. We haven't seen Boston yet. But that Tampa club, I mean, we've been talking, who are the best clubs we've seen? And I would still have to say right now that Houston is probably the best overall club we've seen all year. But Tampa's a very close second. They can do so many things. So when you've got to overcome those types of obstacles and two other clubs like Tampa Bay and Boston, it's going to be a tough road right now, only having about 65 games left to do it in.
Yeah, this is where everything kind of gets sped up. But with the teams that are out there, how surprised are you that the Giants are the team with the best record in Major League Baseball now that we're well past the break?
Well, I think the fact that, you know, it just seems like it's that year where everything has fallen into place for them. All their veteran players that they have are having great years. They're having, you know, almost career years. And when you can have that, it's not really a surprise, you know, that a club like that can go from being not a very good club to all of a sudden a great club. And, you know, their pitching's been good. It's just one of those years where everything has fallen right in place for them. And now they even helped themselves out even more getting Bryant, because, I mean, what a luxury to have a guy like that who could play third base, play center field, play left field, play first base. I mean, that just, you know, allows you to do so many more things and give guys days off down the stretch and things of that nature. And if you happen to be playing, you know, an American League series, it adds you another, you know, DH that you could use. And, you know, I'm sure they probably have a couple more American League series left.
Somebody that you and I have talked about on several occasions and both know well, Yan Gomes gets a new address as he goes from the Nationals to Oakland. What do you think he could bring to the A's?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's going to be a big plus for them because, you know, adding a guy like Yan, who is tremendous at calling a game, that pitching staff is already good, but it's going to benefit even more greatly. And Yan knows the whole league. I mean, nothing against our catchers there now, but Yan has been through the heat of the battle. He's been to the World Series, won a World Series. He knows what it's all about and what it takes down the stretch. And offensively, he's having a very good year and is going to help that lengthen their lineup as well. But I think the value that he brings to calling a game and receiving, and especially that veteran presence behind the plate, I think, you know, Oakland did a great job. But again, they're in a tough situation too, because they've got to overcome the Astros.
You touched on what the Dodgers have done. They have deep pockets, but they, like the Yankees, have really had to battle injury. In fact, they have some really good players that aren't available to them right now, starting with Mookie Betts. But when you see teams that make significant moves, and for the Dodgers, it's bringing in Trey Turner and Max Scherzer, how much time does it take for everybody to get assimilated when it comes first to the clubhouse and then to any new or different roles with that ball club or their new club?
Well, and I think that's going to be – I don't think it's going to be as big an adjustment for Scherzer being a starting pitcher. I think he'll, you know, just help add to a veteran pitching staff that they have already. But the interesting thing is going to be Trey Turner moving to second base. You know, you're used to playing shortstop every day. Now you're going to, you know, and Trey, tremendously talented, athletic. I don't think he's going to have a problem, but getting used to playing with Seager at shortstop and him being on the other side of the diamond, it's going to take a little while. And so that's why the trade deadline is so fun, to see how all this is actually going to play out. And you talk about them having, you know, just rich in talent. But again, until, you know, Mookie Betts gets back, that just adds another guy in their lineup who can do so many things. I mean, you know, he's one of the fastest guys I've ever seen. And that just adds another dimension to their lineup and a solid middle infield combo right there in Seager and Trey Turner.
And so with these moves, they changed just a little bit. Didn't they modify? It used to be that you would have the trade deadline in July, end of July, and then you had the next deadline, which would be the waiver deadline in August. That's not the same as it used to be, is it?
No, the waiver deadline is gone. So now you can't pick up players like that, where teams would, you know, put a guy on waivers and you could claim him and take his salary, or you could claim him and work out a trade for that guy, you know, in the you know, the opposing league or the same league. And now that's all gone. So there's no more trading this year. You can sign guys who are minor league free agents and things of that nature. But now what you have on your roster and in your organization, for the most part, that's what you've got for the rest of the year. And that's why you see a lot of these clubs going out and you're going, well, they've already got a closer. They've already got this guy. You know, it's a solid bullpen. It's because of the fact that teams are loading up that have a chance to win is because they know they can't go out and find anybody else if they have injuries. So that's a dynamic that has really changed. Now, will it stay that way once we get into the next basic agreement and see how that goes? Not sure. And that's going to be the next interesting thing that happens in baseball, because it's going to be an interesting winter for sure.
That it will be. And today, Mike, we're also talking about just love of the game. And tell me, when was it? Can you remember when you first picked up the game, or when baseball made the impact on you that it made?
Yeah, when I was growing up, my team was the Cincinnati Reds, the Big Red Machine. That's who I basically grew up with. And the first game that I ever went to, my uncle, I was very fortunate. He was a veterinarian in Cincinnati, Ohio. And he had season tickets to the Reds. And the first game that I ever went to was at the old Crosley Field. And it was against the Dodgers, which was a tremendous rivalry back then in the National League West. And it was a doubleheader. And I believe Koufax and Drysdale pitched for the Dodgers that day.
Wow.
And, you know, I knew the Reds were the home team. And I was just... And from that point on, I was very fortunate to probably get to go down there and see 20 to 30 games a year. And from that point on, I was sold. And, you know, there's just something about, you know, the magical things of baseball. You know, when you walk into a stadium and you see the green grass and everything like that, I think I was sold, you know, right from the get-go, and I've just loved the game ever since.
Did you have a favorite player, or who your favorite players were?
That, you know what, it was hard to, hard to pick, really, who your favorite player was when your team was the Cincinnati Reds with, you know, all the guys,
True.
Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan. It was hard to pick. But I think probably, you know, as a fan of a team, I still got to say Pete Rose was probably the guy that I looked at and was probably my favorite just by the way he played the game, hustled, switch hitter, used the whole field. He just brought an energy to the game that I think, you know, sometimes we don't see that type of grit and, you know, way guys go about it today. But I would have to say Pete Rose for sure.
Being the hitting instructor that you've been for quite some time, I wonder why we don't see, and one of the things that stands out about a lot of players that were in the 60s, but I remember as my fandom really exploded in the 70s, I mean, just to remember what Willie Stargell went through from one pitch to the next in terms of how he had his practice swings, Joe Morgan to make sure that his elbow wasn't tucked so he would flap his arm three times before the next pitch came. Just don't see as many guys go through those particular routines these days, although still guys have their own really big-time routines from one pitch to the next, don't they?
Yeah, they do. But, you know, and it's funny you say that because one thing that, you know, we'll talk about with guys is being able to move around in the box even against a particular, you know, type of hitter. Let's say, you know, you're facing a right-handed power guy and you're a right-hand hitter. Well, you may back up in the box a little bit. Back in the old days, if you're facing a left-handed, soft-tossing, change-up-throwing pitcher, you would move up in the box.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get players to do those type of things today. They get to where their toe hold is where they want it, and they really don't adjust much. So, you know, and we've talked about this before as far as some of the stuff that we've seen go away is the situational hitting, the ability to be able to bunt. And I think one of the biggest things, I was talking to Chris Andini the other night about, you know, we're talking about the strikeouts in the game. And in A-ball this year, it has just gone through the roof, the strikeout rates. And I've just got to believe that sometime we've got to get back to teaching a two-strike approach. And you see a few guys around the game that really change what they do with two strikes, but it's very few and far between. And, you know, like you and I'd like to see us get back to some 70s and 80s type baseball and, you know, not so many strikeouts and being able to handle the bat, because to me that takes a lot of talent rather than just getting a mistake pitch and hitting it out of the ballpark.
So true. Can't let you go without getting your reaction to this. The Cleveland franchise made the announcement that after this season they are going to become the Guardians. What did you think when you heard the news? What's been the reaction inside the clubhouse?
Well, you know, outside of that initial day that, you know, okay, we're going to become the Guardians, there really hasn't been a lot of talk about it. You know, I think you get so busy with the day-to-day, you know, going on, and you kind of go, well, not much is going to change except we're going to be called the Guardians now. And it's just something that we have to, you know, adapt to. And Paul Dolan, our owner, made a decision to change the name, and we'll go with it. And hopefully it just it's going to take a while to sink in, though, that we're the Guardians and not the Indians anymore. That's for sure.
Boy, and I do think that announcers are going to have fits when it comes to getting on the same page. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I think they'll be called the Indians by a few announcers and, you know, from other clubs and everything, because it's going to be a big change for everybody, I think.
Very true. Well, you guys have a huge opportunity this weekend as you take on the White Sox. You get to see the Pale host first after their big moves. So, Mike, always appreciate your time. Can't wait to catch up again soon, but good luck this weekend and beyond.
That sounds great, John. Always great talking to you. We'll catch up to you later.
All right. Thank you very much. Mike Barnett joining me on the Stanley Fenching and Gates Hotline as he is the video coordinator for the Cleveland Indians.